I even have a calendar reminder and anyway,
know, the
recording.
best of us. Yeah, I must say repeatedly. Okay, so Zoom reminders is we're not having substantive conversation in the chat. Stay on mute unless you're speaking. Use your raise hands function. Members, keep your video on unless you can't, like Sophia. So approve June meeting minutes. Does anyone have any corrections or edits to the June CSCC minutes or notes? Okay, none. So that means we have consensus support to approve the June notes. And now to convert to the motions. Miranda, do you want to move to approve and Marshall second?
I move to approve the June meeting minutes.
I second.
Ryan, is this a holdover on the project review subcommittee notes, or is that, do we need to do that?
Yeah, we need to do that. So we did not have a quorum of the subcommittee at the last meeting. So yeah, we have both meeting minutes to approve.
Okay, so the second one is the project review subcommittee. If you are on the subcommittee or have reviewed the notes, is there any, are there any corrections or edits to those notes?
No.
Okay. No? Okay, so let's get a second motion by the co-chairs. Marshall?
I move to approve the subcommittee meeting minutes.
And I second.
Okay, great.
All
And now,
right.
thank you. And now Ryan will review the agenda.
Yes, we have a pretty tight agenda outside from the usual. We've got I'll be presenting on a couple of project requests that we've received from the public, or rather the CSCC has received in the last few months. And then following that, Patrick will be presenting on the draft street safety improvement plan. And it'll be up to you if you wanna yeah if you want to approve it or make changes to it. That's all I got.
Okay, excellent. And we're having additional people entering. If you've just arrived to the Complete Streets Coordinating Council meeting, we're just about to do the call to the audience. And if you are not a member or a staff person from the city, if you can put an O in front of your name, meaning that you're an observer, you can rename yourself with the three dots in the upper right corner of your photo. Okay, so the call to the audience, I'll just read the rules. Call to the audience is limited to 3 minutes per speaker for a total of 10 minutes. All speakers must share their name in order to be recorded in the meeting minutes and our Zoom recording. Remember, the call to the audience may not result in discussion with members of the CSCC. No legal action may take place during the call to the audience, and speakers may not be disruptive. Members may only respond to criticism and as well as requests that items be placed on a future agenda for discussion. Members of the audience may still participate in agendized items as per the bylaws of the CSCC. And finally, committee members may request that the item be considered by the co-chairs for a future agenda. And who do we have tonight for any call to the audience comments? If you can raise your hands, so we've got Mike. And who else? Jim? Okay. Anyone else? Okay. So remember, you have 3 minutes. Mike, do you want to start?
Sure, I'll be happy to start. My name is Mike Mayer. I'm with the Country Glen Neighborhood Association, which is just north of the university, between Grant and Glen on the south and north boundaries, and Tucson Boulevard and Country Club on the west and the east. Our neighborhood association has put in a proposal for consideration by the group to put in sidewalks on the east side of Tucson Boulevard between Grant and Glenn. There's sidewalks to the south of our neighborhood and to the north of our neighborhood, but it really is a bit of a safety and accessibility issue. There are partial sidewalks, but it's not complete all the way between Grant and Glenn. And at times people have to get into the bike lane. There's gravel. There are obstacles to get around. So we'd really like for consideration for walkability, for safety, if the Complete Streets group will consider this proposal for a future project. There are also two schools. There's a high school on the southern end. There's Cragen Elementary School on the kind of on the northern end once you cross Glen, where there are safe sidewalks. So, you know, curb cuts, sidewalks, just accessibility, we think would be a great addition to the neighborhood and for anybody walking or in any kind of wheelchair or with a walker or with a stroller. So thank you for your consideration.
Thank you so much, Mike. And now your comments are recorded and we'll go to the topics as they are coming up. Second comment by Jim. Go ahead.
Thank you. I'm Jim Glock. I am with the West University Neighborhood Association. West University is bound by 6th Street on the south, Speedway on the north, Euclid on the east, and Stone Avenue on the west. I'm here before you today, not to ask for money, not to ask for a project, but ask for your consideration of Tucson City Code Section 20-260. We are, and let me do a segue, we are fortunate enough to have accumulated a reasonably good war chest to provide sidewalks in our neighborhood. Over the years, we've been able to extract funds from developers. We've enjoyed the residential parking permit program and proceeds. And we're now interested in constructing sidewalks between Euclid and 4th Avenue within our neighborhood. Section 20-260 is problematic in that it allows parking between the curb line and a property line within our neighborhood. And there, and that is an area where we would like to construct sidewalks. We have 20 feet of right-of-way between curb and property line. We have streets that are 40 feet wide, plenty wide for parking, two-way traffic. And this particular section of the Tucson City Code inhibits our ability to properly develop that right-of-way between curb and property line for pedestrians. Right now, the code allows parking as long as a 4-foot pedestrian way is allowed. That's problematic. We want to utilize that space for not only sidewalks, but for water harvesting as well. So we ask that in the name of Complete Streets, that this particular committee perhaps ask its sister committee, the Park Tucson Committee, to reconsider that portion of the code, at least as it relates to West University neighborhood. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Jim. Anyone else? All right. And again, your comments have been recorded. And any member is welcome to request that they be added to a future agenda. And now we're going to continue. Yes, Jill.
I would love to add that to a future agenda, as Park Tucson has been trying to do the same, trying to address that particular code for a couple of years and has been met with resistance from neighborhoods. So I would love to add that to this agenda.
And you're referring to Jim's comment, correct?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so we're going to move on to Country Club Road Improvement Project, 22nd to Aviation, and Tucson Boulevard Sidewalk Project, Grant to Glenn. Ryan is going to do a short presentation on both, and then we'll have a conversation, and then we're going to roll into the street safety improvement plan with the grounding in those two smaller projects. So go ahead, Ryan.
Thanks, Tani. Let me just share my screen here. Okay. All right. So I'm going to talk about a couple of projects that have been suggested to the CSCC by members of the public in the last few months. This is a little different than similar presentations that we've done in the past, because I'll be presenting information but not making a direct request or recommendation. This is more for you to discuss and consider along with the street safety improvement plan that's next on the agenda. So we have two projects that were proposed. One of them is on Country Club Road from 22nd Street to Barraza Aviation Parkway. This would be a modernization project. So it would be adding sidewalks, streetlights, enhanced bike lanes, that sort of thing. On Tucson Boulevard, you heard from Mike Mayer a few minutes ago. This is the project that his neighborhood requested. They requested sidewalks and ADA improvements from Glenn to Grant. So I'll start with Country Club here. You can see a picture of sort of the existing conditions and a map showing the location here. So the goals would be similar to all of our modernization projects. It would be to improve safety for all users, to improve walkability and accessibility, improve biking facilities, improve lighting conditions, and improve drainage, which actually is something that most of our the projects in the SSIP aren't addressing. But the end result would be to bring this up to a modern standard on the same level as other modernization projects that are being proposed. So the proposed improvements would be complete and connected sidewalks on both sides of the street, along with ADA upgrades, so curb ramps and updated driveways. We would be adding curb because most of this stretch of road actually does not have curb. We would also be looking to add protected bike lanes. Additionally, there'd be drainage improvements. That would actually be quite a large segment of the project. And we'd also be looking to add street lighting. And as far as connectivity to other facilities, this would connect on the north end to sidewalks and a shared use path along Country Club Road and 22nd Street. On the south end, it would connect to the shared use path on Barraza Aviation Parkway. And then there's also a funded bike boulevard, the Andrew Street Bike Boulevard, that across Country Club crosses at 27th Street. So just a little background. In Move Tucson, this project more or less was identified as part of the entire Country Club corridor. It was ranked in Tier 2. And the project description is to modernize the corridor to include continuous and accessible pedestrian facilities, landscaping, upgraded traffic signals, lighting, enhanced bike lanes, and safe crossings, as well as repave the roadway. So we wouldn't be doing all of those things with this project. We'd be doing most of those, focusing on safety improvements. And then just to go over the community input we received, we heard from three people about this proposed project, two from the Julie Keene neighborhood and one from Barrio Centro. And one of the factors was, in their request was concerns about traffic detouring onto Country Club while the 22nd Street Bridge is under construction. Going through our usual look at the equity map, this project is not adjacent to any of the higher or highest equity focus areas. You can see here that it is close to one of them. But is not touching one of those of the two highest categories that we usually look at. And then as far as safety goes, the Pima Association of Governments Safety Explore portal shows the roadway safety performance as poor. There were a total of 94 reported crashes during the 5-year period that looks at. Six of them were severe crashes. Two of those were pedestrian crashes. And one of those pedestrian crashes was at 23rd Street. Let me turn on my pointer here. So that was right around here. The other severe crashes occurred at signalized intersections. As you can see here, the hotspots are really at the intersections with 22nd Street and Aviation Parkway, which is pretty typical for the distribution of crashes along our major streets. So the estimated cost of this, we have kind of a range that there's some uncertainties with this project. We weren't able to take quite as close a look as we were with the Collector Street projects, where we had a consultant really kind of dig into it. So there's some things that are kind of uncertain, but the cost range would be, at least based on our estimate, would be between about $7 million and $9 million. A lot of that is due to the fact that we would need to be addressing drainage issues and adding curbs. That adds a lot of cost. Additionally, even though the pavement is currently in pretty good shape, if we are going to be fixing the drainage on this street, there is the possibility that we would actually need to reconstruct the asphalt pavement and regrade that. That is uncertain right now. So that's a maybe. We don't know. The right-of-way on this street, at least on the east side, is particularly tight. So there would need to be relocations of electrical poles. And then who pays for that is really dependent on who has what's called prior rights in the area. So if that is TEP, then that's on the city then to relocate those at our expense. If they do not have prior right, then we are entitled to ask them to move them for a project. So until we know the answer to that, that's a question mark. So those are kind of the two big variables here that account for that approximately $2 million difference in costs. So we decided to explore a potential alternative to this, given the high cost of the project. So we looked at the possibility of doing a 6-foot asphalt path on the west side of Country Club that would connect to the existing pedestrian facilities, approximately 24th Street to 30th Street. This would cost about $370,000 by our cost estimate. This would be very similar to a project that was completed about 6 years ago on Columbus Boulevard. It's a very similar context. That road is also two lanes, also fairly constrained right-of-way, just similar context in terms of there being some homes that front onto the street. It's also uncurbed. So we did a similar project several years ago. We think that a similar project would be feasible here as well. It could also be constructed. Might be optimistic to think we could do it prior to construction of the 22nd Street Bridge project. But given that the improvements would be taking place off-street, it could be done at least in an early phase of construction on that project, so that there would be a pedestrian facility in place for most of the time that project is under construction. 22nd Street Bridge is expected to take about 3 years for construction, and we're looking for construction to start right around the end of this year. So if we were to do a more extensive project, it would have to wait until at least 2028 before that could begin. So just quite a little context there. So that's it for Country Club. I'll dive into Tucson Boulevard, and then after that, I'll open it up for discussion. So we'd be looking here at improvements to Tucson Boulevard from Monte Vista Drive here on the north to Spring Street on the south. And you can see the existing conditions here. Goals here, as usual, improve safety for all users. And we'd be doing that by improving walkability and accessibility along the road. The proposed improvements would be complete and connected sidewalks and associated accessibility ADA upgrades, such as curb ramps and driveways that meet ADA requirements. And then as far as connectivity to other facilities, this would provide continuous sidewalks that would connect along Tucson Boulevard to the north and the south of this area. It would also connect to sidewalks on Grant Road. There's also some sidewalks on Glen Street. There is a Proposition 407 funded project and also potentially, which overlaps with a proposed project in the SSIP. But either way, the Glen Street will be getting complete sidewalks on both sides of the street in the next few years. So similar to Country Club, this was also identified as a tier two project in Move Tucson. The project description there was add continuous sidewalks, upgrade lighting, and add enhanced bike lanes and repave the roadway. So just an overview of the community input received. We've got requests from two residents of the Country Glen neighborhood, which included a letter from the president of the neighborhood association. They mentioned wanting improvements on both sides of Tucson Boulevard, but put a priority on improvements on the east side, which borders the Country Glen neighborhood. And because there is a short gap in sidewalk here just north of Glen Street, about 280 feet, we decided to look at throwing that in as well, just to achieve economy of scale and take care of that gap if this project were to go forward. This project is not in an equity, in a highest equity focus area. And as you can see, it's at least a half mile away from the nearest area that ranks in the 60th to 80th percentile or the higher category. So PAG Safety Explorer indicates that the roadway safety here is rated as fair. There are about 24 total reported crashes between 2018 and 2022. I just want to note, just because of the project boundaries, because we would only be going down to Spring Street, that excludes a whole bunch of crashes that occurred at Grant. That would have added another 45 crashes. So it just to underscore kind of the difference between mid-block segments and intersections with more major streets. So it is. Generally, there aren't a whole lot of crashes mid-block. There were two severe crashes reported during these 5 years, and there were no reported pedestrian crashes in the project area from 2018 to 2022. So the estimated costs would be a total of approximately $1 million. Our estimate actually came out to $998,000 and some change, with approximately $480,000 to add the sidewalks and associated improvements on the east side, and $520,000 to do the same on the west side. So how does this relate to the draft street safety improvement plan? So you can see here, over the 7 years that we are currently looking at in the draft SSIP, we have $31.5 million in each of the sidewalk and pedestrian accessibility and the system-wide safety improvements categories, and $21 million in the bicycle network enhancements categories. With the projects that are currently in the draft SSIP, we have about $1.1 million remaining in the sidewalks category, about $3.7 million in the bike category, and basically a rounding error in the system-wide safety improvements category. And you can see here the, in the various categories, the modernization project on Country Club would be about $5.8 to $7.7 million out of the sidewalk category, about $280,000 in the bike category, and about $900 to $1.1 million in the system-wide safety improvements category. And then the smaller potential project on Country Club would be $370,000 to put in that asphalt path. And again, about $1 million for Tucson Boulevard sidewalks. And with that, I will open it up for questions and discussion.
Okay. Questions, discussion about either of these two projects? And the bigger question is then if it should be considered a candidate for SSIP funding. Okay, Marshall, then Miranda, then James.
Yeah, I was just going to ask about the two questions. First, the Country Club project. Would that you said you could do the short term fix with the asphalt path? Did you have a price tag for that one? I don't remember.
Yeah, sorry about that. That here, let me pull up that. So that would be
okay.
We estimated that at $370,000.
And that would last. That you we would need that approximately for how many years before then you would do the full modernization?
I mean, I don't. There's not really sort of a time limit on how long that would last. I believe that the path on Columbus is holding up pretty well, and I think it's been in place for more than 6 years. Yeah. So it's not necessarily a temporary fix, just sort of a short term improvement potentially.
And then for the Tucson Boulevard sidewalks, I was trying to look on Google Maps, and you could see some of the sections already have sidewalks. Was the idea, would you also do sidewalk repair for any of the sections that needed that, or is it just new sidewalks?
You know, the cost estimate did not take into account sidewalk repair. So that I will say that, you know, these cost estimates are conservative. So, you know, that ideally, you know, it should be a little bit less than $1 million to do this. Okay. So if we, you know, repairs could be kind of be wrapped into that for, you know, hopefully around that.
But repairs, I mean, and my point is you could include repairs in that section.
Yes, we could if needed. We were directed to. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Miranda.
Yeah, thanks for the presentation. It was really helpful. Just looking at these numbers that are on the screen, it just appears like we could afford, you know, we have room for funding for the asphalt path short-term solution for Country Club, and then bicycle, maybe the bicycle network improvements section, but the other stuff doesn't look like it pencils out. I just wanted to check in and make sure I was analyzing that correctly. And then just about the Tucson Boulevard sidewalks proposal, I'm curious to know how much it would impact the cost of the project if it were extended all the way to grant. And I'm also curious to know if it didn't get funded out of the SSIP, what other possibilities could there be for the neighborhood to improve this stretch?
Okay. So let's see, I'll start with just FYI, the bicycle network enhancements. So that is assuming curb protected bike lanes. That's not something that we would want to do until we address the drainage issues on Country Club. So that $280,000 there, that would have to come with the modernization. That's not something that we would do by itself.
It's all a package.
Or in conjunction with the asphalt path. Yeah, unfortunately.
Okay.
And then as far as the sidewalks go, so there is a sidewalk in good condition, I believe, on both sides of the street south of Spring Street. So from Grant to Spring, there already is sidewalk on Tucson Boulevard. So this would be filling all of the gaps essentially from Grant through Fort Lowell. So this would be filling in the pretty substantial gaps between Grant and Glen, and then just one short section a little bit north of Glen. Did that answer your question about the project limits?
Can you go back to the map?
Yes. Yeah. So this would be the areas that we would be looking to do the sidewalk fill.
Okay.
Outside of those areas, the sidewalk is complete.
Okay. I thought that there was something about how it didn't encompass a high crash area that was proximate, or did I misunderstand that?
I may have kind of confused the issue. I was really just kind of trying to explain, you know, kind of a discrepancy. It's always hard to kind of discuss the safety data and just sort of the raw stats because depending on the project limits, if it includes a major street intersection, that's where most of our crashes occur. So
gotcha.
I was just kind of trying to get at the idea that, you know, mid block between our major intersections, we don't generally have a lot of crashes, especially on, you know, a collector street like Tucson Boulevard. So that's part of the reason why the crash rate was significantly lower on Tucson Boulevard versus on the Country Club stretch that we looked at previously.
that makes sense. Thank you. And then just going back to the numbers and how things are penciling out, it really doesn't look like there's room for funding for the Country Club modernization project.
So that would need to be a decision of how, you know, it, I mean, ultimately, you know, the street safety improvement plan, you know, we can go with what's currently proposed. Changes can be made to that. This would be a substantial change, really, just because it is such a large percentage, you know, particularly in the sidewalk and pedestrian accessibility category. For comparison, the only project that's similar in cost is the Columbus modernization, and that project is about 5 times longer. So most of the other projects are substantially less than that cost. So this would either be, you know, replacing, you know, a project like Columbus, or it would be replacing a few projects. And, you know, alternative would be to look to commit funding beyond that 7-year horizon. That would, you know, restrict flexibility in the out years of the plan. So, you know, that's just a consideration to keep in mind.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. We're looking at about $4.5 million per year, you know, for the sidewalk and pedestrian accessibility category. So this would account for about a year and a half worth of that funding for the sidewalk alone.
Okay, James.
Yes, hi. I suppose you sort of just answered the question. I was first wondering about the Country Club projects. If you had crash data excluding aviation and 22nd intersection, but maybe that would take some time. Is that correct?
I could pull that up and give that to you a little bit later. But generally speaking, you know, I think the major concerns for Country Club were, you know, the major concerns were bicycle and pedestrian safety. As far as pedestrian crashes go, there was one severe crash that occurred outside of those major intersections at 23rd Street. And there were not any severe crashes that occurred in the project area. So, if you want more detailed stats, I can bring you that, but I think that's sort of like the highlights, there.
Yeah, thank you. I think I would, just out of my own curiosity. This is I live right next to the street, and it's very safe, so it seemed weird to get all those, but I don't really consider the aviation and the 22nd to be part of the street. That to me, that's more the craziness of 22nd and aviation.
While Patrick is presenting, I will run an analysis on excluding those major intersections, and I'll give you the stats after that.
Thank you. My other question was about this, the temporary asphalt path. Do you know how much room it would take up? So is it just taking up the shoulder, or would it go on to what is now dirt? Because at the moment, this road is actually a really nice road to bike on because it has giant shoulders. Mm-hmm. And there's just a straight dirt path that you can, if you really needed to scamper away from cars. And I was worried that the asphalt path would just now make the biking worse with, you know, marginal improvement to the walking.
Yeah, the asphalt path would be separated from the existing roadway by at least a few feet. So it would be in the area that's currently dirt. If you are interested in what that would look like, I'd encourage you to look at Columbus Boulevard north of 22nd Street and see kind of what that looks like. I can also pull it up on Street View if folks are interested.
Thank you.
Ariel.
Thank you. I was curious about the short-term asphalt path option on Country Club. Do we have a sense for how effectively that would in the short term address the concerns that have been raised by the neighborhood, and if there is appetite from the neighborhood for this as that is a nothing solution, and more broadly, like what role that kind of community feedback would play in our decision making process?
That's a great question. So that alternative kind of came together pretty late. I had actually hoped that someone from who had spoken previously would be here because I'm curious as well. But no, we have not reached out to those neighborhoods about that. You know, that's something that we could certainly we could certainly look into if, you know, if funding were, I guess, tentatively approved for it, that could certainly be part of the outreach. If you want us to do outreach and then come back later, that's also something that we could look at.
Are there other questions or comments at this point?
Yeah, I guess I would add, like, I think that's a great next step. Just to get a better sense of prioritization in the faithful constraint budget, and maybe it's the flooding that is the biggest issue, and maybe, you know, instead of doing a paved path, that it's just more protection from car traffic, so like more. I think maybe something more than the flex posts, but maybe a separation there that would be like a better solution. But we don't really know because we don't know what the top priorities are. We just have like the general sense of this isn't great for pedestrians and people who are walking, for people who are biking. And it does feel important because it's so close to a big park that parks should be, have really strong and safe and comfortable pedestrian biking connection.
Thanks, Sophia. To show you, you know, this would be very similar to what was on this was on put in on Columbus in 2018. So you can see that here. It's very similar. It's a 6-foot asphalt path. In some areas, it goes in front of homes. It's designed to be driven over. You know, since there are driveways that run across it. So just to give you sort of a sense of what this would look like. You know, this would provide a, you know, an accessible and defined pedestrian path on one side of the road. It's, you know, it's not a perfect solution, obviously. And it's not, you know, as I mentioned, you know, we don't know, that, you know, we I guess we don't know how the neighborhood will respond to this and if this fully addresses their concerns. I do know that pedestrian safety was one of the concerns that was brought up, but that, you know, wasn't the full extent of it.
Okay, so we always prioritize members first. So Jennifer?
Hi, I'm just speaking as also not just Complete Streets, but also a resident of Country Glen. And I just want to speak in favor of the sidewalks. I can't even tell you how many times I've seen people have to get into the bike lane in their wheelchair and also fight with a bicyclist in the bike lane to get to where they're going because it's very patchy. So just want to say that.
Thanks, Jennifer. Moira.
Thank you. Yeah, my name's Moira and I am from the Barrio Centro Neighborhood Association and worked with I'm the secretary in that neighborhood association. We worked with Julia Keene and some folks from Flowers and Bullets to send a letter to Ryan listing our concerns about Sub Country Club Boulevard. Thank you for covering that and for covering the budget. We would love to have a conversation about what some of the options and possibilities are. Really, you know, many of us that do live there, I know someone else spoke and said that they didn't find the area to be unsafe. There are several of us that do walk and ride our bikes along Country Club or have neighbors that are rolling wheelchairs in that area. And we don't find it very safe. So we would really love to have a conversation about, you know, that's not our area of expertise, is understanding, you know, what the costs and what the possibilities are. So if we could review that, we would love to have that opportunity.
Absolutely, yeah. I would be happy to reach out to you. If you could,
anybody, Yeah, put your email address in the chat if you wouldn't mind, Moira.
You know,
I will definitely do that. So the portion where it was, I'm sorry, I jumped in a little bit late because I was working, but the portion between Aviation and 22nd Street, that is the budget amount that was between $5 and $7 million. Is that correct?
Yes. So that the total cost here. Let me find that slide. So we're estimating the total cost between about $7 and $9 million. And that's, you know, that is intended to be a conservative cost estimate, you know, for all of the projects in the SSIP. We're looking to not be too optimistic with our cost projections. But as I mentioned, there's a lot of uncertainty because there's things that really would need to be explored in greater detail to determine if those would be costs as part of the project. But it would be a several million dollar project in order to address all of those issues and modernize the street.
Sure. Okay. Well, thank you very much for opening up a possibility even to achieve, you know, some improvement. And we look forward to continuing the conversation.
Thanks, Moira. Mm-hmm. Zach?
Yes. Hi. I just had a question, and maybe I just didn't catch the meaning of, like, in terms of, like, the asphalt path, why would that be considered temporary? Like, what about it makes it temporary, and then what would be the next step to, you know, what would be more permanent, like the next step after it?
Yeah, so temporary was, I think I misspoke when I said temporary. It's really more of a solution that could be done in the short term. You know, as you can see, this is last year along Columbus. This was installed about 6.5 years ago. It's still in good shape. So it's not something that, you know, would only last for a few years. So it could last longer than that. Temporary wasn't the right word. It's really more something that could be done as a short-term solution in order to address the at least some of the concerns about, you know, pedestrian safety and accessibility along Country Road.
Okay, that makes more sense given what I know of the Columbus project.
Okay, so wrapping up these, unless there's other further comments, what would potentially happen is that they would be considered a candidate for SSIP funding. Are there any of you who think they shouldn't be considered? That's not deciding. That's just that they be considered. And then we're going to roll into the SSIP topic. Anyone who's got concerns about them not being considered? I mean, anybody who thinks they should not be considered, rather.
Are those estimates already included in the SSIP?
They are not. These are outside of what's in the SSIP.
Okay. So we would look at that tonight and then say, actually, we want you to consider including Country Club improvements in that. And then we would have to decide what to take out of that.
That would be one option. Yeah. Looking at what to take out.
Roger.
Just one question. The Tucson Boulevard project, it was split in two parts. Could you show that screen again that you went?
Yes. There you go.
All right. So east side is what the neighborhood association is requesting be done. So that cuts it in half compared to. So when you consider these projects, can you consider splitting it like that and just doing half first and then the other half?
That's certainly a possibility. I believe that they, you know, they first and foremost wanted improvements on the east side of the street, but they, you know, they pointed out the deficiencies in their letter on both sides of the street. So I think ultimately the neighborhood is looking for improvements on both sides. But yeah, I mean, one side or the other could be considered.
Yeah, I was just looking at the total dollar amounts available, which is like $1.1 million, and Yeah. The pedestrian bike path on Country Club and the east side of Tucson Boulevard fall below that of what's available.
Yeah. And I should elaborate here that, you know, I mean, these uncommitted funds remaining, you know, that's not a hard and fast, like, we ideally we're not exceeding those, or at least not by very much, but, you know, ultimately we're looking to commit about 7 years worth of funding, at least in the current SSIP, you know, in a couple of the categories we're currently looking to spend less than that. You know, ultimately it's a decision that you all make, in whether or not, you know, if you wanted to approve, for example, the Country Club asphalt path and Tucson Boulevard sidewalks on both sides, that would go outside, that would go over by about $200,000. So that could be a decision that would be made, that just knowing that we would be going a little bit outside that 7 year horizon in that category.
Thanks.
Ariel?
The point of clarification as we think about whether to shift other projects that are currently in the draft SSIP. One of the high priorities in terms of how projects got included in the SSIP, as I recall, was that we've been directed to layer safety funding onto planned collector repaving projects. And so I didn't remember if we've mentioned anything about whether these projects, either Country Club or Tucson Boulevard, would be layering projects or if they'd be standalone projects.
They would be standalone projects. There's not currently funding identified anywhere to provide pavement improvements on either.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so returning to the question, moving these, is there anyone who would not like for these to be considered candidates added to the list for SSIP funding? Okay, so that seems that there is interest in adding them. And that's not necessarily a decision, right, Ryan?
I think it's just, you know, I think we move on to the next, the next agenda item and just kind of consider the whole SSIP and how these may or may not, you know, fit into it.
Okay, that's great. So Patrick will provide a presentation about the street safety improvement plan. We'll review and discuss that proposal and consider consensus approval at the end of this topic. So go ahead, Patrick.
Okay, thank you, Tani. Good evening, members of the Complete Streets Coordinating Council. We are finally here in front of you after 2 years in the making, it feels like, I'm sure it was, to present a final draft proposed Safe Streets Improvement Program, as was required in the Truth and Taxation resolution passed by Mayor and Council. Tonight, I think it's an opportunity to dig into the individual projects a little bit. I can rehash some of what we discussed at the last meeting, but I think we covered pretty thoroughly kind of the rationale we had stepped through, the basis for prioritization, and some of the criteria that the task force, or the subcommittee rather, was evaluating when prioritizing and selecting projects. Just very briefly, basically, we are setting aside 20% of Proposition 411 for safety improvements that have to be defined in this SSIP, which is further subdivided across four categories: pedestrian safety, bikeways, safety, and traffic signal improvements. Over the last 2 months, or sorry, before I get into that, we had established a framework almost 2 years ago now with the task force about how to prioritize projects. And a couple of you had mentioned this. Tier one was really looking at those layering opportunities, and tier two was looking at then standalone projects within those categories based on criteria pertinent to those categories. At the last meeting, we talked about we were evaluating three different potential funding scenarios of tying up 5 years into the collector program for the layering, 7 years, or 10 years. What we ultimately ended up doing through conversation with the task, with the subcommittee, was we are actually going to commit about 5 years of funding to the layering projects, which gets us about six collector layered projects, because the direction that the subcommittee provided was we could have more bang for the buck, and we really want to get to the crux of the pedestrian safety crisis that we are facing in the city, and to take opportunities to redeploy those funds after addressing the 5 years of collector streets to some of our critical pedestrian crash corridors. And as Ryan went over in his previous presentation, typically, while we have some collector streets that are not designed to our standard, that may not be providing the safest condition, that's not really where the pedestrian safety crisis is occurring. So we, on that discussion, kind of redeployed those funding, that funding to address where we know those safety issues are. And a couple of them that really popped out to us were Fort Lowell. So we moved a bunch of money to Fort Lowell between Oracle and First Avenue. Irvington Road was, it's an unlit corridor with a history of pedestrian crashes, so we identified lighting funding for Oracle, for Irvington, and 22nd Street, where from I-10 basically to Keno, where we've got a future project, a big capital project planned, but we also recognize we have a pressing pedestrian safety crisis on that segment currently. So upon direction from the task force, we were looking to redeploy some of the funds that we were originally tying up into the collector program to address that underlying pedestrian safety issue. So that is kind of where we left it. I'd sent out the final draft proposed plan to this group last month after a final discussion. And I guess what tonight I can do is bring the plan up onto the screen. If anybody has any questions about the specific projects, we can step through that. We are seeking action tonight. There will be about 18 new projects, and we are looking for the opportunity to really get that funding authorized so we can get these projects moving. With that, I will bring up a shared screen. Can you guys see this?
Can you make it larger?
Probably.
Zoom in a tiny bit.
I'm trying to zoom in, and it says it's zooming in, but it doesn't appear to actually be zooming in.
In the lower right with the magnifying glass?
Well, there you go. Yeah, it was covered up by the window of other people in the meeting. Thank you, Tani. All right. That's
better.
Yeah, great. So we'll step through this quickly. These are the projects over the last two years. The reason we're calling this a seven-year plan is because we're basically projecting 5 years out into the future. We've already encumbered 2 years of safety funds through kind of this approval of a one-year program at the outset of 411 and through those piecemeal actions of those individual projects that have been brought to the CSCC. So everything you see here in the orange are projects that are either complete or had previously been committed. So these are just there for context. This is where that funding is already going. A lot of these are already in active design. And in some cases, we've finished Greasewood already. We've completed Old Spanish Trail already. Silverbell should be done this fall. Tucson Boulevard, I believe, is complete. We're just looking to lay down the final striping. Bilby is advancing in design. So we're making good progress on these. This is the next batch of the six recommended collector projects that I had mentioned. So those are Drexel Road, 29th Street from Wilmot to Craycroft. And the Drexel section is Mission to Midvale. 36th Street from Mockingbird Lane to Mission Road. Fairview Avenue from Wetmore to Grant. Glen from Cherry to Elvernon. Columbus from Fort Lowell to Broadway. And Romero Road from Roger to Prince. So that represents about 5 years of safety funding across these various categories, layered in to the collector street program. And these are the six corridors that we're proposing are going to get more of that complete streets treatment, because we're going to be layering in those different funding streams. Now, the way we prioritized these was looking at the Move Tucson layering, seeing if there are opportunities for layering in with other programs to enhance them, and then looking at the equity areas and the underlying crash performance of the corridors. Before I move on to the next section, does anybody have any questions about the six corridors that are proposed for the collector program? I will also draw your attention. I think you have these. The ones that are grayed out at the bottom are the projects as a function of the decision to only tie up the 5 years of funding are not getting proposed for funding and will be advanced as basically pavement only projects. There'll be some restriping. We'll look at kind of lane configurations to accommodate what we can between the curves. But these are projects that would not be advanced under the layered collector program to receive 411 safety funding.
Okay, questions or thoughts for Patrick at this stage?
You had me and then you lost me. For this table that we're looking at right now, it'd be cool to know like the top three changes that are being proposed or what is being proposed.
In terms of what the actual project description would entail?
Yeah, like is it sidewalk? Is it that sort of thing.
So we have the general description. So we have the general description of what that modernization project looks like. And each of these corridors is deficient in kind of that complete streets way in its own unique way. Everyone's a snowflake, right? All of our corridors are special. So the kind of concept of the build out would be complete, continuous, accessible sidewalks, or pedestrian accommodation, lighting, pedestrian crossing opportunities, and an evaluation, if necessary, of changing the lane configuration. So if we have excess capacity, we are going to evaluate for potentially a lane reduction. What I'm going to do is I'm going to stop sharing, and I've actually set it up so we can do a street view on each of these and talk through the projects in turn, or how would you like to approach that, Sophia?
I'm okay with bullet point list, but
okay.
We can do that if that's helpful to other people. Some of us are visual.
Anyone want to take Patrick with his visual?
I would like a visual. Sorry, Sophia.
Well, good. So I'm going to do a stop share because I got to get off the PDF and onto the street view. So the first one we're looking at was on our list is this West Drexel Road. Does anybody know how to? I can't get to my tabs because the Teams thing, I think I moved this. Aha, sorry. I'm just having a conversation with my computer, but it just puts it right in front of the thing I need to navigate on. So Drexel is basically this section. And actually it's got, in terms of the build out of the pedestrian accessibility, it's not bad. The issue that we're seeing here is that it's a completely unlit street with five lanes at about 7,000 ADT right in front of Grijalva Elementary School. So the proposal with this project is basically to repave it. And when we repave it, look to do traffic calming, evaluate through the neighborhood the potential of a lane reduction because we're at 7,000 ADT. We've got three lanes to the west and three lanes to the east. We just have this five lane section hanging out here, which has begun attracting street racing. Has become a concern for the neighborhood, is completely unlit. And then this is actually related to the Drexel Bridge project, which if you look a half mile, quarter mile up the road here, one of the primary concerns we heard expressed through our Drexel Road Bridge project outreach was that there's going to be a generation of additional traffic, particularly on this segment in front of the elementary school. So we can get out in front of that with this project to basically slow the traffic down, make it a more appropriate scale for the neighborhood and address the safety concerns of the school and bring in that lighting. We do know there's pedestrians out here. It's a neighborhood kind of street. So that's the intent there, as well as the repaving. One special kind of unique piece of this corridor is we are going to have to take a look at the West Branch crossing of the Santa Cruz. So it is a dip crossing. There's no all-weather access. So when the rivers are flowing, basically, this is impassable. So we don't have money under this to do all-weather access. We can't elevate this roadway and build a bridge under this program. But what we can do is repave this, potentially using concrete, which will hold up better with those flows across it. And this is currently not connected to any existing sidewalk, the pedestrian bridge that provides all weather access over the West Branch. So we can then provide those connections to that to at least allow pedestrians when they're, you know, during monsoon to have that all weather access. So that is Drexel West. East 29th is a pretty typical kind of collector street. It is existing curb, and this section is from Wilmot to Craycroft. It's about halfway into a equity focus area, and you can see it is curved, and it doesn't look too different to a lot of our other collector streets. You've got utility pole conflicts that we'll have to figure out. You've got no sidewalk. You have a primarily residential area. You've got a three-lane roadway without identified or very faded bike facilities. The traffic volumes here are low, so in the repaving, this is one we could evaluate for the potential of the removal of that center turn lane to provide more comfortable bikeway facilities, and also kind of move the traffic a little bit away, moving traffic a little further away from the pedestrians. I think our biggest conflicts and challenges here are going to be kind of navigating the utility conflicts. We do have some lighting here. We'll evaluate that, whether we need additional lighting. So that might be a cost saving on the project, but it's essentially repave, restripe, add the sidewalks, and address some of those needs. I believe this was also a tier one Move Tucson project, although the totality of the Move Tucson project goes all the way to Alvernon. Our next one, I believe, is Glen Street. And stop me if you want to stop me. Glen is an interesting one. So we have on Glen Street a Prop 407 walkability project that basically goes from Oracle to Country Club. What this proposal would do is layer in 411 funding with that other funding to extend those improvements, at least for pedestrians, all the way to Alvernon. So take an additional mile, but they would also be layering in some bikeway money so we could evaluate the potential when we repave it and restripe it to also include some enhanced bikeways on this section of Glen. And one of the things we're already in exploration on would be to evaluate whether, again, the center turn lane is needed. That's something we've been looking at across the city. And if it meets, you know, if the traffic volumes aren't high and it wouldn't pose an undue safety risk to the traveling public for an increase in rear end crashes, we are looking at that for the removal of these center turn lanes, which could potentially provide additional space for those bike lanes. We'll also have to evaluate in terms of driveway conflicts. But you can see here, again, minimal to no lighting. No sidewalks or sidewalks on one side and kind of the in-street work. The 411 piece would basically go from Cherry to Alvernon, overlapping with the 411 project. So we can deliver a bigger and better and more comprehensive project with that layering.
Seems that Marshall has a question.
Marshall.
Yeah, I know you've talked about a lot about the removing the center turn lanes, and I know Glenn further east already has the center turn lane removed. Is that actually working out well?
As far as I know, we haven't heard a lot of complaints and haven't seen an uptick in crashes. But Ryan, you are a little bit more involved in that project. Have you heard any feedback in terms of the overall performance?
I'm not aware of that. No, sorry.
So it's something, typically when we look at that, it's not something we want to approach lightly. So if we're reconfiguring the lanes, we'll look at what the safety impacts are. We'll look at what the left turn volumes are. We'll look at what the peak hour volumes are. We'll evaluate whether we need to retain some left turn pockets at key intersections. And we'll also see if there's additional traffic calming we can do so we don't have excessive speeds and people making left turns out of the travel lane to, you know, avoid those or reduce those possibility of those rear end crashes.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. We've got a couple examples we're looking at right now, actually, of 411 projects on Limberlost as well as on Bilby. We're looking at evaluating the left turn lane removal.
Quick question, Patrick. Has a consideration been made for bus pullouts on Glen? Because that is a Route 1 major bus route with a lot of, especially during the school year, there is a lot more traffic going to the university, and the buses can really tie up traffic. So if there's not a turn lane, is there room or money for some bus pullouts at non-major intersections? Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Good question. That's a little probably premature to say. We're just getting into the project development, but I'm sure that's something we'll take a look at to see what the impact is with transit vehicles, garbage pickup, mail delivery, to make sure all that can still be accommodated in a safe manner without putting undue burden on, you know, all users of the roadway.
Sophia.
Something that I'm feeling is that with all these projects, I don't think there's any way that we'd be able to approve the funding, but if there was some kind of assurance of like being able to look at each project and then go element by element, it just feels like, right, we have, it's 9 projects?
6.
Oh, it's 6 projects?
Well, it's 18 in total, it's 6 just in this one category.
Yeah, and, you know, we've been spending 20, 30 minutes for one project. So I feel like for people who are new or for people who are still getting a sense for the infrastructure, I think it's just, it's asking, it feels impossible. I can definitely be open to the impossible. But it's just, this is really helpful. And also, I don't know if we're going to get to a decision.
Yeah. I will just say that was one of the reasons why we wanted to make sure that we had that additional detailed discussion with that subcommittee structure. I know it doesn't address the needs of the whole committee, but we wanted to make sure that there was that opportunity for people to really roll up their sleeves and dive into these projects individually. So I would turn it over to the kind of level of confidence if anybody from the subcommittee would like to speak on the work that was conducted there.
Miranda?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Sophia. I totally agree that it seems impossible to consider a whole package of projects and just turn around and approve it all. I think where my thinking was going as far as our work as a subcommittee had to do with thinking about sustainability and the fact that we do want Complete Streets, you know, to kind of touch or influence as many projects as possible and to leverage funding in the most effective way. I'm kind of a systems level thinker, so I was really approaching all of these projects through the lens of like, what rubric are we using? Like what priorities are we weighting and like how much? And that's part of like where the crash rates came out was like through discussion of, you know, Move Tucson and all of the deep, you know, outreach work and all of the data that was used to inform the sort of prioritization into tiers, like, you know, appreciating all of that, but then also thinking through like the fact that one metric I think we should be considering as a committee as far as our effectiveness should be impact on traffic violence, you know, and like crash rates. And so that's why that part came into the equation and why that is part of the rubric. So I guess I'd be curious to know like what the CSCC's thoughts are about like the approach and like the structure that we use to sort the projects, and maybe not so much like getting into the granular detail about the projects themselves. I think just because we have, I think, talked through, you know, sort of like the different considerations already, like as far as, you know, using Move Tucson, using equity zones and things like that. So yeah, just curious to know like if that resonates or if that makes sense. I don't think it's a realistic request to ask the CSCC to look at each one of these projects and individually and then approve them as a package.
Yeah, and then if I can just jump in, I feel like there's some of us who are really active in participation on this call, but it'd be great if we could hear from every single person on the call, like what's the one word that you need in order to approve the SSIP plan.
Zach, is this related to that?
Yeah. I was going to say, you know, participating in the subcommittee, what I was really struck by is what we can do with layering and thinking about how close collector streets are to more arterial streets and how those can work together to create like bigger effects than doing one or two major projects that would eat up a ton of our budget. So that was like really what was attractive to me in terms of the scope of the proposed project list. So.
Sophia, just to clarify, you said to go around and ask people one word. What did you say? I didn't hear.
Yeah, it's like, what's that one thing that you need to be able to pass something like this?
Yeah, we could do a go round of the members. Patrick, could you just clarify, passing this, what is getting lost? What is not moving forward if this package moves forward?
So basically, it would reduce kind of each individual project coming through the CSCC in a piecemeal fashion. The reason that would be valuable to have the longer term plan is A, it allows us to be more transparent to the public. We can communicate our intent years in advance. We can also line up kind of project development years in advance, as opposed to kind of doing it in this piecemeal fashion. So we know what the workload is, we know we can align it, and we can communicate it to the public. It'll provide that certainty and kind of that budget. What we'll lose will be kind of that one-off request that's been coming to the CSCC over the past years, where we hash out each individual project. And we wanted to develop this and look out those years. Really, I think some of the frustration that the CSCC or members of the CSCC had expressed as well is that lack of context every time an individual project was being asked to be approved. Like, what is the impact that we can't have if we have this? The purposes of having a program or a plan like this lets you know what those trade-offs are. So I guess to go back on what something I just said, there is a possibility that an additional project could come in, but now we have a plan and we could honestly say, okay, if we want to do this in the next 5 years, something has to come off of this list. So we know what the impact of those decisions are a little bit better and what we're giving up to get something. With regard to kind of some of the options we have as well, we are intentionally leaving 3 years uncommitted. And there's a couple of reasons we're doing this. A, it'll allow us in the event in 2 to 3 years, we can reevaluate the program and see what the financials look like, and we'll still be able to add additional projects to the plan. But it also gives us a little bit of a buffer in case costs continue to run wild. We know that there's money there, and at least we can do the things that are on the plan, even if we have to dip into future year money and go a little bit slower. But that's kind of the reality we're working in right now with this unpredictable cost environment.
And just to clarify as well, this is not precluding that later when the design work is actually happening that the CSCC could be involved in that. Is that correct?
Absolutely. So the way that we're proposing this is we're not designing these projects yet. We bring them now for funding, which authorizes us to start design. The next step is that we get a designer on, we do our public outreach, we come up with a concept, we bring that back to the CSCC at 15-30% at the conceptual design level for comments, input on each of these individual projects when we have a better understanding of what our constraints are, what our challenges are, and what the public sentiment is. But we can't do any of that until this money is authorized to start that design.
Okay, thanks. Somebody raised their hand, but now it's down, so I don't even know who that was. Okay, so maybe we could just do a go round of the members, and you can say one thing you need, but also just comment on your thoughts about approving this package as is, as it's been described, or if you're not ready to do that, what you might need. So just a brief check in from each of you. I'm just going to call names. Starting with Miranda.
I was an active part of the subcommittee, and I feel comfortable bringing this proposal forward to the CSCC after two meetings and extensive discussion in the months leading up to that.
Liz?
I don't need any further information, and I think also just hearing from Patrick right now on that there is that buffer of 3 years and there is like room for more conversation. I feel pretty secure in the projects that have been proposed and the work that the subcommittee's done. So thank you.
Thanks. Jennifer?
I would like to place my trust in the subcommittee's work as well.
And Zach?
Having participated on the subcommittee, I am very comfortable with the direction of the proposed plan. So I don't really need any other.
Jill?
Same. I don't really need anything else. I think that this makes sense. It's more cohesive. And I mean, it is a little bit more transparent having the understanding of what's lost when something else is gained. It just seems more, you know, pragmatic. It seems like a more, makes more sense to do it this way. And I really appreciate the subcommittee doing all that work. And of course, you know, definitely trust subcommittees. Advice.
Thanks, Jill.
Or direction, I should say.
Marshall.
I guess I'll just kind of echo. It's hard to find, you know, reviewed materials beforehand. It's been kind of hard to find fault in what they've come up with. So, you know, I'd still like to hear the rest of the Patrick walk through the rest of everything. But, you know, so far, I don't think anything's been wildly wrong or anything that I would recommend changing.
James.
Yeah, I feel a little kind of confused about, I feel like the information one would want to determine which, you know, it's unrealistic for any of us to really get that information. Even the subcommittee couldn't get to that level. It's like, yeah, the fear I'm trying to avoid is like in 10 years being like, oh, that was dumb. Like, why did we do that instead of something else? But, I mean, I guess we're supposed to lean into our role. And I guess I had an opportunity to attend the subcommittee, and I didn't. So it feels a little insincere to ask for more information now. So I would support whatever the subcommittee says.
Sophia, and then Arielle, and then we can have additional comments.
Yeah, no one said that I don't know what I need, and I'm kind of curious about that. I needed to understand the flexibility of the project decisions, if we were able to change our minds in the future about lighting or sidewalks or bike lanes, and it sounds like what Patrick just described is that. Yeah, and James, thanks for sharing candidly about that tension of wanting to be more involved, and then also we're not paid to do this and we have other commitments.
Thanks, Sophia. Arielle, and then Miranda.
Thanks, Miranda and Zach. I was part of the subcommittee, so I'm comfortable
with things. Oh, wait, I couldn't hear what you said. Can you?
Sorry, I said like Miranda and Zach, I was part of the subcommittee, okay. So I'm comfortable moving this forward.
Okay, thanks. And Miranda?
Yeah, I appreciate hearing from everybody, and especially understanding, especially newer members who may not have, you know, been part of, you know, have obviously not been able to be part of previous discussions or known about this stuff, how it might feel a little bit like too much information, or like it's not possible to sincerely come to a decision. But I guess I would just say, I believe that part of our work as a subcommittee was also trusting in processes and trusting in available data and information. Like, if this isn't like a random list of projects or priorities, it's the result of like information that's been filtered through and that's made it onto the list because of a variety of different things that involve like extensive outreach and using a lot of different information. And we also took a really active role in curating what information was considered. So just like not wanting people to just feel like they have to trust the subcommittee's work, but, you know, just sort of like, I want to convey that that involves trusting like the data guiding, you know, sort of these decisions and things like Move Tucson, you know, with the priorities, and also like being cost effective by layering, like that's a really huge thing. And I do think that that's part of why the two additional projects we looked at tonight are pretty expensive. And when you look at it within the context of the existing proposed plan that we have brought before you tonight, it's a good chunk of, especially the Country Club Modernization Project, like it commands like a pretty big proportion of the available funds. So I think taking that holistic view is also incredibly important. And I also just want to say that just because some of the projects aren't making it to the top doesn't mean that they're not deserving. And there's a ton of projects across the city that are deserving that aren't on any of these lists. And the fact is that we just need more funding in general for roadway projects. And so I think it's just important to like lean into processes and structures that can help us to make these decisions.
Thanks, Miranda. So it seems like there is support to approve the SSIP plan and move it forward, but with the caveat that there's a lot of interest in still being engaged in these projects as they, you know, once they start getting designed, et cetera, and that ability to discuss future potential projects in light of these, that kind of thing. Patrick, Ryan, what are your concluding thoughts with the topic?
Well, first off, I just want to say thank you, Sophia, for the question. It was an excellent question. This is, absolutely a challenge with the amount of time and, you know, access to information that people have available to them. I want to mention that this isn't the final word on this either. So we have been very conservative, both in terms of the project costs and in terms of our revenues, anchoring that to the original estimate from 2022 or the original projection. Funding is already coming in above that. So what I would propose is that potentially every 2 years, we revisit the plan in the context of how much things are costing, what has been delivered, what's being advanced, and where our revenue is at, which at that point, if there's capacity, we can look to either add additional projects in within the base years, or that's when we start discussing, you know, year eight, or if we have some constraints. So we want this to be a living document, but we want it to be solidified enough to provide the certainty to, again, kind of begin aligning our work to it as a city department and to deliver these projects. Does that help at all, Sophia, kind of address?
You got a thumbs up from Sophia on that.
That's a great assurance.
And we hope it comes up in our favor. History hasn't been kind for the last 2 years, but it's about to turn. I can also share, if it'd be helpful, if you guys want to dig in a level deeper, kind of the spreadsheet that we had shared with the subcommittee to look at the kind of data evidence that we were using to support these decisions, just to kind of get a glimpse under the hood.
Yes. Sounds like yes.
Okay.
You can share that. Okay, so, and Ryan, did you have any comments about this?
I don't have anything to add to what Patrick said, other than just, we do have the Tucson Boulevard and Country Club project requests out there. So, you don't have to make a decision, I guess, tonight, but if there is any kind of direction, I guess, that the CSCC wants to take, it might be helpful just in terms of knowing where you're at. So, as Moira spoke earlier, you know, there's interest in having a dialogue about, you know, what we might be able to do along Country Club potentially. And so having an idea of whether or not, you know, something, even if maybe not the full modernization, could be considered, just so we have an idea of that moving forward, because we don't really have a lot of other funding sources available for things like that.
Thanks, Ryan. And we'll talk a little bit about the remaining funding constraint, because there is a little bit more flexibility that I want to get to beyond these projects, because not everything is being programmed tonight. So before we jump into that, I just want to mention, here's kind of what we're looking at. So we broke down all of our projects and we had a number of criteria by which we evaluated them. We looked at the share of the project that is falling within kind of the high or medium high equity focus areas, where we have a higher concentration of transportation vulnerable population in the city. We looked at what's called the segment level of safety service. And this is basically a measure of how well a segment of roadway, and this doesn't include the intersections that Ryan talked about, this is expressly the segments, How well they perform against similar type roadways at similar traffic volumes. So it's comparing like urban collectors against urban collectors at say 10,000 ADT. And if these are performing poor, it means, well, they may not have the highest number of crashes. They are underperforming from a safety perspective in the city. So it's a relative measure. We did the same thing for the intersections. So we separated out intersections from the segments to evaluate them separately, because we know that there's different types of improvements that address the underlying safety challenges at those. We also looked at the total number of traffic fatalities across the segments. We looked at the number of those that were severe crashes. We looked at the total number of crashes. We looked at severe pedestrian crashes. We also looked at whether it was on what's called the high injury network for pedestrians. And the pedestrian high injury network is something that came out of Tucson's pedestrian safety action plan that identified basically the top 10th percentile of roadway segments in the city where pedestrian fatal crashes, or actually all pedestrian crashes, it is severity weighted, but it accounts for all crashes are occurring. And this was one of the things that really drove the change. So again, we're not seeing that a lot of our collector list is on the high injury network. So we didn't want to overinvest in that and try to address some of that underlying core safety challenges. And that's when we got into the safety projects, looking at that Irvington I mentioned, 22nd Street, Fort Lowell. So by kind of shrinking up our collector list, we could hit some of these critical corridors. So those were the criteria we were looking at. Also consideration, again, of those layering opportunities, the equity focus zones, the Move Tucson prioritization, which also was a multi-criteria evaluation of each of our kind of proposed improvements. So I can stop sharing there. We can go through the rest of the plan, or kind of however the council wants to take this on. Oh, sorry. One thing I do want to show. Here we go. So we can come back to that, but there is some funding availability. So this is what we're looking at in terms of what we are committing. So if we look at the sidewalks, over that 7-year horizon, we've got about $1.1 million of funding capacity left out to year 7. And then if we look at the totality of the expected revenue up to year 10, we've still got about $14.6 million left unprogrammed in the plan. And those will be the future iterations if we come back in 2 years to start maybe doing another year of this, another $4.5 million on sidewalks. But this capacity is still there. That country club, either the country club or the Tucson project could fit in under that cap within the existing plan. We don't have to commit that tonight, but that capacity is there. The biggest funding availability that we have is really under the bikeway category. And this is, we've kind of left this one flexible. We can look to come back with some future opportunities for projects, but we do have more projects to program on bikeways. So this might be a space where we're coming back for some one-off asks in the next couple of years, because we do have that capacity still under this plan. Safety is kind of the critical constraint, and we're using every penny of that pretty much. Just assume that $9,000 isn't there. I don't think our project estimation is that precise, so we're running pretty close on that one. And then finally, we're going to bring this one in because it's a little bit on its own course. But in September, we're looking to come up with a comprehensive signal improvement plan. We had approved that 1 year for $3 million for the traffic signals, which is including things like flashing yellow arrow conversions, which is allowing us to do the full protected left turn protection. But we need to be making those initial investments in the signals. It can also upgrade them to kind of smart signal technology, where we're improving our detection, improving the efficiency of our intersections. Pretty cool stuff. The propeller heads got it figured out, but we'll bring a proposal in September to kind of tie up that funding, because they're looking to get going. They've already done a whole lot of work on signals with that first batch. If you see a lot more of those flashing yellows rolling out across the city. So with that, I can stop and turn it to the committee.
Marshall.
Yeah, I just had a quick question about the signals. You mean the flashing yellow? Does that mean like we did, or like you all did at Speedway in Rosemont, where you add the turn signals for left-hand turn lanes?
So there's a couple of other things happening. Some of them were just converting like the standard left turn function with the green ball to the flashing yellow. So we've okay. had a number of those in the city, but this has actually also been funding the, where warranted, the inclusion of a left turn phase in a number of locations. That might have been one of them.
Yeah, that was one of them. Okay, thank you.
And when we do that, we'll put the flashing yellow operations into effect.
Other comments or questions? Zach?
Regarding Ryan's question or like kind of direction of where we go for the country club and Tucson projects that were discussed earlier, I think for me I would like to hear more about what the neighborhoods around the country club area would think about doing the asphalt work and how much of that would address some of the concerns noted. If we want to think about funding out beyond the 7-year capacity for that, and then maybe looking at least how committing to east side improvements for the sidewalk on Tucson would fit into a future iteration of this. So that's, I guess, just where I was thinking.
Other comments? So Patrick, can you clarify what the decision is tonight?
At the committee's pleasure, I think we are seeking a recommendation, or not even a recommendation, we're seeking full approval by the CSCC of the SSIP. So that's...
James.
First I had a clarifying question. I think you said this, but I want to make sure for myself. The 411 safety remaining row, that's just the 3 years after the 7, that's that money?
Yes, so this would be the total predicted revenue collection over 10 years, minus what we're committing, both through projects we've committed previously and the 7-year program.
Yeah.
So this would be the money that's left to play with.
Okay, yeah. And if I remember from Ryan's presentation, the full improvements to Country Club most likely couldn't happen before the 22nd Street Bridge anyway, which was 2028, I think. So it seems my opinion on that is the price tag may in and of itself be somewhat irresponsible, but it seems like something that could be the full improvements might be something we do with the remaining money. It seems like the asphalt path and then the one side of the sidewalk for Tucson seems like something we could do. But I guess hearing about this now, this is more flexible, even with approval going forward in the upcoming years. This is not that final of a decision. So that's those are my thoughts.
Patrick. Oh, did you want to respond?
No.
Okay. Could you just clarify, Tucson Boulevard and Country Club will be included in this SSIP, or they would be potentially added as more funding becomes available?
So there's a couple options on the table. One, we could add probably one of them tonight under the financial constraint that we have, or we could add both with the direction to dip into that future year funding. So that could happen now. Option two is we could keep this capacity that's in this plan and bring that back for a future decision of the CSCC and add it to this plan. And that doesn't have to wait 2 years until we do
a whole review of the SSIP. We could look if we want to potentially tap into that remaining 7-year funding for the sidewalk. So it doesn't have to be a decision tonight. We can have that discussion with the neighborhoods along Country Club to see their appetite for the shared use path option and bring that information back.
Okay, so on the table is approve the SSIP as it stands without those two projects, knowing that you don't have to wait the 2 years, you can even next month bring it back, but you could gather more input or have further discussion or whatever and decide how and if you're going to add them. So is there anyone who would not support moving forward, approving the SSIP as it is outlined now? Okay, it seems like there will be consensus support, barring anybody who's got a problem with that. So let's just do a quick go round of members, and you can just say thumbs up, I support, thumb to the side, not going to block it, have concerns, but not going to block it, thumb down is I don't support. James.
I support.
Sophia. Thumb to side. And I'm saying it out loud because Colleen she's not here, she's on vacation, but she's going to type up all the notes based on the audio recording. Zach. Thumbs up. Jennifer. Thumbs up. Marshall.
Yeah, I think I'm thumbs up. I just wanted to say, I think, we saw the beginning part presentation for Crunch Club and we've seen some of these projects tonight in a little bit of detail. It's just really hard to kind of say what the right answer is. But I think right now it's okay to go forward with it.
Okay. Thanks. Liz. Thumbs up. Ariel. Thumbs up. Jill. Thumbs up. Miranda. Okay. Consensus support to move the SSIP approval forward. Thank you all. And all of the additional conversation and caveats, et cetera, are noted and will be taken up by the agenda, the co-chairs and us. So the next topic is the CSCC hub. So I'll just call on you. It looks like, and anybody new, this is about the Complete Streets Relevant Other Commissions and a hub to where you get to give a very short update, have two-way communication back and forth. Roger, were you raising your hand? Okay. So Independent Oversight and Accountability Commission, Jim is not here. Is there somebody else who wants to speak on behalf of the IOAC?
Jim gave me an update earlier. There was no IOAC meeting this month. The next one will be in August. They just had, I believe, a pre-construction meeting for repaving of Tucson Boulevard from Grant Road to 6th Street, as well as Elm Street from Campbell Avenue to Tucson Boulevard. So those are two Collector Street projects that will be moving forward very soon and will be done before the end of the year.
Great. Park Tucson, Jill.
Hi there. We just met yesterday and kind of continuing on with the Neighborhood Reinvestment Program, the commission voted that once the director meets with all the affected neighborhoods that they're going to cap reinvestment, I think, at $3,000 a year, which will and remove participation thresholds. So it's like good and bad for neighborhoods, but it's staying and neighborhoods can still benefit from parking money to do, roadway improvements or sidewalks and stuff like that. And that was pretty much it. Same stuff, like the budget isn't great. Parking, needs to make more money, blah, blah, blah. Does anybody have any questions or comments or anything to take back to the Park Tucson Committee? Commission? Oh, All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Jill. Tucson Transit Advisory Committee, Riley's not here. Anyone else who can speak on behalf? Okay. Bicycle Advisory Committee, James.
Yeah, we did not have a meeting in July, which was news to me come last Wednesday. So I guess just see the previous minutes for the updates.
Thanks. Commission on Disability Issues, Zach.
Yes, thank you. We had a meeting last Wednesday where the commission was able to speak to the new city manager for a good bit of time, which was very interesting. Kind of relevant issues for Complete Streets is we talked to him about the, you know, the possibility or the need to put in some exceptions to Chapter 25 in the Tucson City Code, which requires private property owners to be responsible for sidewalk maintenance. This isn't always possible and or getting property owners to maintain sidewalks. So he didn't have an exact plan yet, but he is taking it very seriously. Other things that I think would be relevant is I did check in with the Cody on what we just approved, the draft plan, and members were very supportive of the overall idea of focusing on a mix of collector streets and arterial streets. I think members of CODI would be very interested in following up in terms of like when these projects get to the design stage, because sometimes design of, you know, elements either helps or hinders access in terms of where signals are placed, in terms of where sidewalks abut, you know, plant matter, that type of thing. So, yeah.
All right, thanks, Zach. Anyone have any comments or things to share back with Cody? Okay, that was the CSCC hub. So the second to last topic, personal Complete Streets experiential opportunity for the month. So this would be, we're skipping July. So August, this is about having everybody try to make an effort to do this one single thing. Visiting a small business and notice the street infrastructure around it. For example, a streetery, buffer between road and walkway, etc. With extra credit, even though that's conceptual, not real, if you can get there with in some other mode besides a car. Sophia, is there anything you would like to elaborate on? No. Okay, so try to do this at least one time and then actually remember it. You can jot some notes down and then we'll have some sharing back in the August meeting. Okay, and finally is wrap up future agenda items, DTM update. So DTM staff project updates, Ryan Patrick.
I can give a few updates and then Patrick might have a few more to add. I alluded to this earlier, but we are looking at the 22nd Street Bridge closing around the end of this year, or the beginning of next year for construction, and that construction taking approximately 3 years. The Stone Avenue cycle track extension that would extend that two-way protected bike lane on Stone Avenue south from Alameda all the way down to Ochoa Street, that construction will get underway this summer and should be complete before Tucson Meet Yourself and the Dust Music Festival this fall. The Silver Bell construction on that is coming along, as Patrick mentioned earlier. Something that I wanted to just bring to your attention is originally we had thought that we, as far as the protected bike lanes on that street go, that we could only do flex posts or flexible bollards. We had some drainage analysis done that showed that we actually can do what are called precast concrete curb segments. It's not continuous curb, but it would be curb interspersed with those flexible bollards. So we don't have a cost for that just yet. It will end up being a bit more than what we originally had planned, but it should provide better protection. So I just wanted to give you an update on that, the kind of seizing on that opportunity to improve that bike facility beyond what we originally thought we'd be able to do. And then that's all I've got right now. Patrick, do you have anything?
No, thank you, Ryan. I'll just mention that Grant 3-4 is kind of in full bore now. That project is moving. It's the next batch of RTA projects. There's a significant one that's going to be Valencia Road widening that's out on the street right now for contractors and should be closing in August. So that project will be hot on the heels. We'll get that one moving. The next meeting of the First Avenue Citizens Task Force will be August 22nd. It'll be the second meeting of that body. Again, feel free to reach out to me if you'd like to get added to the distribution list. We're still in early design on First Avenue, but the project is moving. We're looking to probably do a pretty comprehensive public outreach phase this fall to really hear from the community before we come up with any design concepts. I don't recall if I communicated this with you all at the previous meeting, but we were kind of hanging our hats on the hope for a federal grant for the Drexel Bridge project. We were unsuccessful in that bid. It was a very competitive program. I think we heard there were over 1,000 projects submitted across the country. I think 100 were awarded. But we won't get down. We will continue forth, and we will continue to advance the project and probably resubmit next year for the same program as we get closer to construction readiness. The other poker we have on the fire on that one is it is our top priority project that has been submitted for the RTI Next program. And I will segue into mentioning that the RTA PEG boards are meeting tomorrow. That should be posted on their calendar, and they will be discussing, and this is one of the last opportunities to really talk about what that RTA Next plan looks like. So if you're interested in kind of in tracking that, that might be one to tune into. That's still kind of a lot up in the air right now, but you know, that kind of Move Tucson was the backbone for that. They are still looking at a May election next year for RTA Next. So that's kind of where we're at. Half of the city is under active construction with repaving. That's an exaggeration. I don't have the actual number, so that was responsible of me. But 411 continues unabated, and Jim would be able to give that update, but he is not here. But I hope you've seen some of the work happening out there in the community.
Thanks, Patrick. So there is, Miranda posted the RTA board meeting info. Sophia, then Marshall, have comments.
Well, yeah, that was going to be my question, which was what Patrick was mentioning with half the city, air quotes, under construction. Is there anything that we can learn? You know, there was the monsoon, lights were down. I had sent a question just about, like, are there any learnings that we can have when things like that happen, where we can identify, oh, we expected traffic to be bad here, but actually it wasn't. Any kind of analysis we can do of pedestrian biking experience, rolling experience when that happens. Because it almost acts like as a temporary closure, and then just seeing what kind of activity arises.
Yeah, a lot of times we'll take those opportunities to look at how the drainage infrastructure is performing on some of the corridors, especially ones that are in design. So with the recent rains, you know, we got out on First Avenue and wanted to see how that was flowing and how it was impacting to really experience that. In terms of how it, you know, affects traffic operations, I'm not sure it's something that we necessarily go out there and have been proactive in trying to analyze. It's typically an all hands response approach of just making sure that we are getting the city cleaned up after those things blow through, or that we are getting some of the signage out for the dip crossing closures under Project Splash to make sure that where we are closing, that we're, you know, discouraging people from driving through those areas. But it's an interesting thought.
I'll give a quick contextualization. So like driving down Stone, I'm like, oh, the light's down, but it's not that bad north-south. Mm-hmm. But then I peek around and Grant is super backed up. And so that's just interesting feedback that, you know, stone doesn't have the same volume needs as, and we already know that. But then I just think that's helpful, especially, you know, as we look to put a lane only dedicated to a bus there in the future.
Yeah, it's a great observation. It's also an interesting human experiment to see if six lanes of traffic can navigate a stop control. Ryan, is there anything you want to add to that? To Sophia's question, comment?
No, I don't have anything to add.
No, thanks, Sophia.
Thank you.
Okay. Are there we're going to just switch the order here. Any events? Oh, Marshall, I forgot you. I'm so sorry.
But yeah, I was just going to ask about the work on Grant. How much does RTA, what phase of the work does the current funding take that through?
So phase 3-4 will be constructed. I think it's going to be about a 2-year project, maybe a little bit longer. So that will be 100% wrapped up. There is still a funding gap on Grant 5-6, and we're looking at opening it up. I want to say we're short about $50 million currently for that project.
Go ahead. Would like the next RTA next pick up the rest of that, maybe?
So there's kind of an ongoing, what they're calling cost to complete approach that the RTA board has been taking with each of the jurisdictions, and basically looking at their ongoing cash flow and looking what the estimated expenses of are on each of those projects to come up with strategies on how to fully fund them. So what they've been doing is identifying any regional gas tax money called HERF 12-6. We federalize some projects, bringing in federal dollars, and then kind of following that cash flow. And then it's going to become a matter of prioritization, because there may not be enough money to fund everything. So some of the projects may have to extend beyond the sunset of the RTA and just basically suck up some of our regional funds for the foreseeable future to deliver those. Two projects have been moved into RTA Next already, and I would suspect that the board would be hesitant to do any more, because basically, you know, when a third of RTA Next just becomes a continuation of RTA One, that's not necessarily the most appealing thing for the community's voters. So those were 22nd Street from I-10 to Keno, and Houghton Road basically from Broadway to Tonka Verde, or Speedway to just north of Broadway, I guess. Or no, Broadway to Tonka Verde, yeah, is our first time. So those two have been delayed. And actually, one of the projects that was on the SSIP was to add temporary lighting to 22nd Street, where it's pitch black and we have ongoing pedestrian safety issues. We're proposing it as a temporary solution, because we know in the future that full corridor enhancement is going to be coming. So we don't want to invest significantly in lighting, but we need to address the challenge immediately.
Thank you.
Thanks, Patrick. Okay, are there any topics? We're not going to review the list again. You saw it last time. Are there any topics in your minds that you would like to see in the next meeting or two?
Based on maybe on, well, I say I didn't raise my hand. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Is it based on maybe the comments about streetlights? If we could also get like a detailed presentation on stoplights and all that, like we did with the pedestrian crossings. I think that would be helpful. I have a lot of questions about those cameras, which supposedly measure the cars.
Okay. Other thoughts? All right. Are there any events that people need to know about in the next month?
Make sure to vote.
That's an important event. Okay. And we have just 1 minute left. Any final comments?
Just real quick. I don't know. James, I didn't forget about your request for the crash data on Country Club. I'll just show it really, really fast. If you have questions, you can email me. I can share screen. So the Safety Explorer is kind of quirky. I had trouble with selecting the boundaries, because if I went just a little bit further north, it captured everything at the 22nd Street intersection. So I kind of had to draw it a little short, so it doesn't actually include the severe pedestrian crash at 23rd Street, but you can see, as opposed to, I think it was 94 crashes.
Are you sharing your screen?
Oh, shoot. Sorry, I didn't do the last step. Sorry about that.
Okay.
I was even pointing at things. So I had to draw the boundaries a little bit short, so it actually doesn't include 23rd Street, because when I drew it just a little bit further north, it captured all of the crashes at 22nd, and it bumped up the total crashes to in the 60s. So, but when you exclude them, you know, they're in the teens, essentially, when you're excluding 22nd and aviation here. And this doesn't include that one severe crash that was at 23rd Street.
So. Thank you.
Thanks for following up on that, Brian. All right, well, this concludes the July meeting of the Complete Streets Coordinating Council. Thank you, everyone. And enjoy your next month and stay cool or something. Or enjoy the heat. All right.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. Stop recording.